This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I'm just waiting for a call from CJ Box. Oh, this is an exciting day for me. First CJ Box, and then Michael Crace. Whoa, what a day. This is going to be exciting. But I do want, before I talk to CJ, I want to just remind all of you, if you are looking for an agent, you really should check out Publishers Weekly, and you should check it out every week, because there's always interesting news about agents in there, particularly if you go to the section that's called Book Deals, and you will see what agents are active, and those are the type of agents that you want. You don't want an agent that's just listed somewhere in some list that you find on the internet. You want an agent who is actively working and getting big book deals. And it's always just fun to see who's gotten a book deal. And there was a very interesting 8-way auction. Now, auctions are very exciting for the people up in New York when an agent has eight different publishers trying to get a deal. It's very exciting for them. I know that one of my favorite agents, Irene Goodman, has been involved in many of these type of auctions, and she says it is exciting, it's nerve-wracking, because you have to wait. They go around, and the bid keeps going up and up and up. And so it was really interesting to read that Siddiq Fofana, he is a English teacher in Brooklyn, and he was involved. His agent got into a situation where it was out to 8 different publishers, and they were all vying for the deal. And finally, somebody got it. It was at Scribner, and they're going to publish it in 2021. And it went into the high 6 figures. So that's pretty exciting, both for Siddiq, and I think it's going to be a fascinating book. It is called Stories from Our Tenants Downstairs. And it sounds interesting. And always, for an author to be involved in an auction, whoo, that must have been an exciting day, and maybe 2 days, because they go back and forth around to the different different ones. And so it's exciting, and I just want to congratulate him, and I think that we'll look forward to talking to him in 2021 when the book comes out. He's going to be a very, very happy guy. So that's something, and that deal was brokered by Ethan Bassoff of MMQ. And again, the best way to find out what agents are getting deals is to just go to Publishers Weekly and go on to the book deal section, and you will see that it's just fascinating to, when you're in this business, and it is a business, you want to know what's happening and when. That's part of the whole deal. Sometimes it's also getting involved in different events. Like BoucherCon 2019, which is coming up in Dallas, and I'm going to talk to CJ Box about that one. And also, one of the things that I want to mention is that, you know, when I did the BoucherCon here in Florida, it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to talk again to CJ about that, and It's just always so much fun to talk to the authors who I really love. And I will say, there are some authors I just get such a kick out of. And one of them is just coming up right now, because I think he is just a hoot. And it's funny, he's one of those authors that other authors talk about. So it means he makes an impact, not just with the readers who love him, but with other authors. And I love him because he wears a cowboy hat and he drinks bourbon. And he came up with a nice, a phrase that I really like, an aluminum crew cut. So I'm so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, CJ Box. Hi, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, I'll have you back every day if I could. I just love talking to you. And as I was introducing you, I was telling people that you're one of those authors that other authors talk about. You know, Ace Atkins will say that, oh, I was drinking bourbon with... Yeah, you know, or another one is Andrew Grant, who loves your books. So, you know, authors,
that's right. I know those. Those are good guys.
I know they're good guys, and they love your books. And I think they all. Well, why not? I mean, you are such an amazing author. And this new book, whoa! It's called The Bitter Roots, and it is so good. I'm like. It took my breath away to read this book. It is amazing.
Well, thank you. I know there's a lot of twists and turns in it, and probably ends in a place where you didn't expect,
I didn't.
But it was fun to write.
Well, I felt it that it was, and we have to talk about this wonderful character that you've developed. I loved it. Before, I loved her before, but in this book, your character, Casey Duell, has headed off from the law enforcement end of her career into being a private eye.
That's right. In the previous books, as you know, she was introduced in the book The Highway in 2013 as kind of just a secondary character. But by the end of that book, she sort of takes it over.
She did.
And I found I really enjoyed writing the character. I liked her. I liked the way she thought. She's a single mom. Her husband died in Afghanistan, and she's raising a son. And she's, you know, slightly overweight, and... you know, her biggest attribute is that, you know, she's kind of relentless when it comes to getting to the bottom of things. But she's no superhero. She doesn't beat people up. But she just keeps moving ahead. And I found after that book that a lot of readers really liked her, including my wife, my daughters, my female agent, my female editor. They really liked the character, and I wanted to continue to write her as well. It was fun this time because she is a private investigator that she's finding out what it's like on the other side of the law.
Oh, boy.
She doesn't have a badge.
And
yet she doesn't have her own authority.
And she has some experiences that she has to look at with a new eye.
Right. Yeah, she wants to believe that, you know, the law enforcement people she's dealing with are all on the up and up and straight like she was. And finds that it's tough when you're on the other side.
Yes, and well, in a way, it's like a PI procedural because I love the way that you write. You know, you show her writing her notes and how she does her research and all of that. I think from a woman's point of view, you know, that's just interesting and something that every woman would be doing that type of thing. And so it was really great. You do capture her. She is a character that we can relate to. Casey is just the type of woman that I think all of us other women would like. Her mother Isabel is funny, and of course her son Ben is somebody that we care about. And so you just hit it every mark with developing her character.
Wow. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, and I'm glad you like her so much.
Well, I love Badlands, by the way. But you know, every time, all of your writing is so superior to so many people. I mean, it is why I just always liked when I start reading your book. I feel a calmness, and it's funny. I've never been really in the Western states. And so most of what I know about the Western states comes from reading your books. And because you write so clearly and you vividly, and you just paint the picture. It's sort of like those painted scenes of the West. And you put us right into it.
Well, thank you. I try to portray the region and the states and the culture in a realistic way, warts and all. And, you know, and because I live there, and I want to be authentic. The last thing I ever want to hear is somebody, you know, within the Mountain West say that the novels aren't authentic to the place or could never happen here. You know, and that luckily that does rarely happen. So even though I know the area well, I still like to do the research. And in the case of the Bitterroots, I needed to go, you know, back into western Montana to the Bitterroot Valley to make sure that I got a good feel for the place before I read it. And so I drove, you know, and because the area is so big. I live in Wyoming, and Montana is just the state to the north. But it took 14 hours to drive from my little ranch to Bitterroot Valley in Montana to do the research. And it just reminded me how big it is, how vast it is. And at the time I was researching it, the entire state of Montana was on fire, which I incorporated into the book. I mean, every mountain range was on fire. And so there was smoke, you know, hung really heavy every day. People were being evacuated, lots of helicopters dropping stuff. They never even dented the fires, but it added a kind of atmosphere that I didn't really think about till I went up there.
And that became very useful in the storyline. Now, I had never heard of the Bitterroots. I'm not familiar with the West. So I had to go and look at I was sure that you didn't make it up, although the name is so perfect for the story, because this is a story about a family. And believe me, Bitterroots is ideal name, for this Kleinsasser family in your book. But I had to go. I checked it out on Google. I actually, you know, got the satellite view so I could see that it's a real place.
It really is. The Bitterroot River is a well-known river for fly fishing, for trout. And that plays into the story where Cassie kind of refers to the people who have moved into the area as members of the Church of Trout, because they all wear fly fishing clothes and drive around in big SUVs but never seem to ever go fly fishing. And
yeah,
it's
well,
a certain culture that really exists.
Yeah, I come from northern Michigan, and we have those people, too. It's so funny. You know, all of us look at all the people who come during the summer, and they are exactly like that, the Church of Trout. It was great.
Yeah.
I love that.
And the Kleinsasser family is they are certainly probably the most dysfunctional ranch family you can imagine, but they're also based on a lot of real stories of, you know, the what they call the curse of the third or fourth generation, where the grandchildren or great-grandchildren who inherit this huge ranch that has a lot of influence over all the county and the valley, the siblings go to war. Either they want it for themselves, they want the others out, they want to get removed, they want to sell it. And that's based on a lot of big land disputes in the Mountain West, although this one is probably more twisted than most.
Twisted, that's an understatement. And in a way, it's funny, your book is full of clues along the way. It's in a way a mystery story, not just a suspense story, because you do have these clues that makes sense once, you know, we get toward the end. And wow, as I said, it's an amazing ending. There are so many twists and turns, like some crazy mountain road, I guess, which would be appropriate for you, that gets us to the end, because this family they are, when we're talking about developing a characters, you've really done it with this family.
Well, even Cassie in the end realizes they're even more depraved than she could have imagined. And I think that hopefully, you know, that makes the whole thing compelling.
It does. It does. And there, as always with you, you take us for this adventure that we learn things along the way, and you introduce interesting characters. Of course, I like very much Rachel, the attorney. Tell us about that character.
Well, she was actually introduced in a book called Back of Beyond. She's the daughter of an outfitter in Bozeman, Montana, who is a very prominent, crusty old guy who took backcountry trips into Yellowstone. And because Cassie enlists her father, named Bull Connor, in a previous book to take her back into Yellowstone, and he's kind of physically and mentally too old for that, Cassie feels like she owes a favor to this defense attorney, Rachel. But I like the dynamic between the two, and no doubt, you know, they'll be back because it's fun to write about. I like the character of Rachel. She reminds me a lot of my daughter, the attorney, who's very strident and very effective. And the relationship between Cassie and Rachel, I think, is a good one.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned your daughter. In my very first interview with you, I mentioned that after the interview, it was so funny, several women came up to me and said, well, you know, we never read C.J. Box because, you know, they're Western books and we don't care about the West and it's, you know, it's unfamiliar. And they want, you know, something said in Cape Cod. And I said, no, you'll find out if you read this. I said, and I explained how your daughters helped you, how your, you know, it was a sort of a family thing. And they said, so they started saying, oh, well, if, you know, he has like one of his daughters in the book. And so they started reading you. And one of mine, who,
well, good, thank you.
One of the listeners came back to me, I think after our second interview, and she came back to me and she said, you know, I had to go back and I had to start at the beginning. And I said, I'm glad you had to do that.
So, I am too. Thank you very much.
Isn't that wonderful? I was a little disappointed in that she bought them mostly secondhand on, you know, on Amazon. But, you know, anyway, now she's buying them as they come out. So that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. That's fantastic.
Isn't that? But it's sometimes something as simple as that readers love to just know a little bit about the author, to care about the author as much as to care about the books. And so having that, well, I mean, that probably is why you write so beautifully about strong women, because you're surrounded with strong women.
I am. And I remember pointing out to my publisher probably 10 years ago that at the book events, the audience tended to be 50-50 men and women, and a lot of husbands and wives who read the books. And I know how unusual that is. And they didn't really believe me until they did a focus study on their own and found out that my readership is exactly 51% women and 49% men. And in this genre especially, it's usually either or. So it's never strategic, but I'm glad it's worked out that way.
And particularly because they are Western books where a lot of women still feel that they can't relate to people. But any woman anywhere in the world actually can relate to Cassie. And it was so funny. I know that you're very popular in France, which, you know, French people love the West. They love Westerns.
They seem to, yes.
And I'm sure, and I know that you won some French prize, prix, something or the other. And they love the West. My husband, why I love a man in a cowboy hat. My husband, when we lived in Europe, always wore a cowboy hat, which was...
Oh, good for him.
It was just perfect for him. And we got into places that other people could not get into simply because of that cowboy hat. They let us go into the Ritz Hotel they opened the door. And, you know, they don't open the door at the Ritz Hotel for people. You know, there's so much, so many important people there, and they have so many guards. And he just walks up. It was like just a passport into all sorts of locations and getting the best seats in restaurants. So that's why I love a man in a cowboy hat. Not, and, of course, you look so good. And I wanted to ask you, are you going to put rhinestones on your cowboy hat for Dallas?
Never. No.
No?
Never.
You're not going to be a rhinestone cowboy? When you are going to BouchyCon, right?
Not this year.
Oh, you're not. Oh my. Oh, well, that's.
I was going to, and something else came up with, and so I had to cancel.
Oh well, you know, I'm sure every place you go, you stand out from everybody else. But at BouchaCon, you wouldn't stand out because everybody's going to be wearing cowboy hats.
That's right. When I'm on the tours, whenever I go to the West or especially Texas, people don't look at me because I'm wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so funny. I was hoping that you'd be there and that you'd have your put some rhinestones on your cowboy hat and maybe your gold belt buckle. And probably now that you've, I don't know, you've sold at least 10 million, probably more, you have a diamond belt buckle now.
No, I still have the same one I've had for a long time, and a belt that's made, it's actually braided from the tails of our horses. It's one of my most prized possessions.
Well, even with all the glitz and glamour that's going to be on in Dallas, you would stand out, I think, in any crowd because you're such a good-looking guy. I was just looking at your website and I saw that you do love fishing, and I love fishing too. Having grown up in northern Michigan, trout is my favorite form of fish, but it's just wonderful. I want to tell people about your website before we leave because you have that CJ Box. .net, and I wanted to mention to people it's .net because people get so frustrated. They say, "Oh," but all they have to do is do CJ Box, and they'll find you. And the Bitterroots is an exciting book. I think I think you had originally planned in that Highway series to do like four books or something. I don't know. You're going to be writing about
Yeah, I didn't really plan that far ahead, but it just sort of lingered.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh my goodness, I've written four books with the same protagonist, but I refuse to call it a series, but it kind of is
it,
now.
It is. Oh yeah, because you're going to be coming back to Casey often because, as I said, your readers will demand it. Isn't it nice that readers demand it?
I think you're right.
What is the funniest fan letter you've ever gotten? How many want to marry you?
I've gotten some really weird ones. I got one recently because there was a feature on me in the Cowboys and Indians magazine from a gay cowboy in Arizona who wanted me to send him money so he could buy a new truck.
Okay.
Because he figured I had a lot of it, and he followed it up with several other requests for cash.
Well,
that was unusual.
That's unusual, but I think you've probably gotten a few proposals too.
Oh, not really. No.
Well, you know, it's funny. I know you have fans all over the world because your books have been translated into 30 languages. Can you imagine that? Whew, that's exciting.
I can't. No.
And it's funny. I have fans in Australia and the Ukraine. I never in my life thought anybody in the Ukraine would be listening to me. But isn't that the wonderful thing about the internet and TuneIn, where people can listen to me in other countries, and of course people love to read you in wherever they are. And The Bitterroots is just a brilliant book. I love it. And CJ Box, I want to thank you again so much for being a guest on Joy on Paper, because you are really a joy and it's so much fun to talk to you.
Thank you very much. This was fun.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Whoa. That's exciting. He's great. The book is fantastic. We're going to play a special book buzz for somebody very special, and then we'll do commercials and we'll come back with Robert Grace.
Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. The House on Xenia by Rita Moreau is the fifth in the delightful Mary Catherine Mahoney mystery series, if I may say so myself. Here's the buzz. When a body is unearthed at the House on Xenia, long-held secrets could be revealed, but no one is talking, especially the aliens. Mary Catherine Mahoney, MC, prefers numbers to her supernatural powers. But when a cold case corpse shows up under her cousin's family home, the only calculations that add up are paranormal. And deep within the floorboards of the House on Xenia, MC and her madcap Greek family uncover evidence pointing to visitors from another planet. Pursued by military agents intent on keeping the secrets buried, MC will have to play by the rules of the House on Xenia in order to expose the alien mystery. And there's only one member of the family who can get to the hidden truth. The House on Xenia can be read as a standalone in the Mary Catherine Mahoney Cozy Mystery Series. If you like psychic female sleuths, crazy family antics, and long-lost aliens, then you'll love Rita Moreau's quirky tale, if I may say so myself. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the books you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
My next guest, Robert Crace, the author of A Dangerous Man and the mystery writer of America Grandmaster. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Patsy. It's great to be with you.
Okay, well,
I wish I could type that fast.
Yeah,
I'm listening to your typing there.
isn't it a lovely sound?
It is. It's a great sound.
Oh, I love the sound of a typewriter. You know, it's so funny. If they make a keyboard that gives the sound of a Selectric typewriter, I would buy it in a second because that's what I first learned to type on, and I love that sound.
I'll tell you, I do too. Now I write on a laptop, but when I get stuck for an idea or a bridge in a scene or whatever it is, when I'm having a really bad writing day on that keyboard, I still keep a Selectric in my office.
Oh.
And I'll turn it on and I'll listen to that amazing hum and I'll run paper through that thing and I'll start to make notes to myself on that Selectric. And there's something about that percussive rhythmic sound that always helps me bridge the gap, always helps me to free my thoughts. I don't know what it is, but I love it.
I know. It's almost hypnotic. It takes you sort of into a different world, and it's magical. I love it. Well, it is so good to welcome you back to the program, because I'm looking forward to seeing you at BoucherCon. Pretty soon.
Great, yes, in Dallas, I'll be there.
Because I just did my first one here. It was 2018 was here in St. Petersburg, which is sort of in my backyard. And so it was real thrilling. I had never been to one before, and it was so much fun. And mostly it's the readers who come, the fans who are there, and they have such energy, and they're so excited to see their favorite authors. And of course, you are everybody's favorite author, so it's just wonderful. And I'm looking forward to meeting you there.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you too, and I love BoucherCon. It's been about 5 years since I've been to one, so I'm really looking forward to being in Dallas. It's going to be great. I love meeting readers.
Yeah, everybody was actually people were talking about you. You know, in a lot of the panels, they would reference people who influenced them, and so many of the authors up on the panel, famous authors, but they would all mention Robert Crace. Oh, yes. Oh, he had such an influence on me because of, you know, Elvis Cole and Joe Pike novels and some of your standalone novels because you, well, you know, the thing is, I would know, if I had never read you, I would know that you, and I didn't know that you were an Emmy Award nominated scriptwriter. I would know that you were a scriptwriter because you have such a visual way of writing that really you learn when you're writing scripts how to do that, how to in very few words to really make something come alive.
Yeah, I think of my TV years as my writing school. I was very, very fortunate. You know, I was a baby writer when I got involved in television and broke into TV. I was doubly fortunate to work on the terrific shows that I worked on with the top flight actors and writers and producers, shows like Hill Street Blues and Cagney and Lacey, Miami Vice, things like this. I learned so much. I mean, you could not. If you went to the finest universities in the country and you studied literature and writing, you could not buy a writing education as fine as the one I got by working with those people.
Oh, I know,
and
I know.
I know I'm a visual writer, and I love it that the books are visual, and hopefully that adds to reader enjoyment.
It does, and you know, I wrote scripts. I wrote scripts. As a matter of fact, I had three of my spec scripts were optioned and appeared in the Hollywood Reporter, which you know is a pretty good thing.
A great thing.
Yeah,
sure.
It was a great thing, you know. And I am very grateful that it happened while my father was still alive because he got to see and he got to, you know, show around in our small town. Oh, you know, Patsy is in the Hollywood Reporter, and she's got three scripts that they've optioned. But unfortunately, they went into development, and then they went into turnaround, as you know what happens over there.
Been there, done that.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy. Oh, boy. And then, of course, I was too young to understand the business side of it. I was too young to appreciate how you really have to deal with it. And that's why I'm on the west coast of Florida instead of the west coast of California. Because, it, you know, 20, 25 years ago, it was difficult for a woman to get anywhere. And that I got three spec scripts, you know, option was major. And I...
Stunning. Yeah, that's a major deal.
But, you know, I wasn't smart enough business-wise how to handle it. But, of course, you having the 10 years in as a writer for TV, and as you say, it's a wonderful place to learn. And Sue Grafton and I used to talk sometimes about what it was like to be in Hollywood. And as you know, she didn't want her books turned into movies because she hated what they did to them.
Sure, she knew too much about it.
Exactly. She said,
yeah,
oh, no.
Yeah, ditto.
Oh, yeah, don't take my books. You know, she could have made a fortune selling her books. I mean, she made a fortune anyway, but, you know, she just didn't want to see it. And but it is a learning experience, and of course you learn the craft. And I want to particularly thank you for the new book, which we have to, I didn't say the name yet. It's called A Dangerous Man. It came to me at just the right time. I really needed this book because as I got in, you know, I love all of your books and I read them through the years. I can't believe it's 32 years or almost, right? Since how long has it been?
Longer than I care to think.
Yes, it seems like yesterday. But as I'm reading, I get into A Dangerous Man,
And, of course, you right away put us in the action, put us in the scene. And although the book is filled with action, as all of your books are, I found myself calming down. I felt actually my heart rate going down, and I realized, why? How can this be? You know, there's action here, but I'm so relaxed, and it's because I'm so sure that you're going to deliver for me that it was amazing. I took it like a deep breath at one point, and I said, this book just is so incredible.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. What a nice thing to say. It sounds like you trusted the writer.
Exactly.
I love that.
Because, you know, so I do. I get a lot of books, and I worry as much for the author as for, you know, the reader. I want it to be good. I want it to be. But with your books, it always happens. But particularly this one, it was the first time I thought, whoa. My heart rate is going down. I'm so relaxed here. I'm so sure that you're going to deliver, and you did. You got me nervous one time.
Well,
I thought,
maybe too is your trust in Joe Pike.
I trust Joe Pike. Oh boy, do I trust Joe Pike. Very much
I do too.
Very much like your main character, Isabel. I love this girl. You just created such a wonderful girl, and we'll tell everybody because it's out there that you know, something's going to happen in the first chapter, and I never know because I never read any of the promos, and I know all your publicity people send me all sorts of nice things telling me what's going to happen, and Amazon puts some kind of thing on the thing. I never read anything because I want it to come fresh to me. I start right at the beginning at the acknowledgments and at the dedication and the everything, and then I don't want to know from anything else until it happens. And when it happened, when what happens in this book happens, you know, it's just so exciting. You just make it so exciting.
Well, I appreciate that. All writers are readers first, and I approach my books primarily as if I were the reader. You know, I'm writing this book for me. You know, hey, Bob, write the novel you would like to read. And I do that with all of my books. And I think I'm a pretty good reader. You know, I'm a fan of this genre. I grew up reading crime novels of all varieties and stripes. And so when I set about to write the book, I'm trying to entertain that reader in me. And hopefully it translates to you and you know, all the other readers out there. If I'm delivering the story in a way that makes it exciting and keeps you turning the pages and keeps you involved and fascinated and intrigued by the characters, then great. Then I'm fulfilling. Then I'm fulfilling my role, and I'm giving you your money's worth.
Oh,
but at
you
the
give
same time. I'm making, you know, little Bobby, that teenage reader who first discovered this stuff. I'm keeping him up late, and I'm making him turn the pages, and that's my goal.
Well, you succeed, and I love Elvis Cole, but I must say I'm really particularly fond of Joe Pike, and I just feel so good, as you said. I know he's going to deliver, and you have no military background, but yet we in really very few words you manage to create this very very strong, wonderful Marine.
There have been 18 books in the Elvis Cole, Joe Pike series, right? I've written 22 books in total, 4 standalone, and then 18 with Elvis and Joe. And most of those 18 books are primarily from Elvis Cole's point of view. But every once in a while, I like to flip their roles. I like to give Joe the lead. And it depends on the story. And with this story, where this young innocent woman, Isabel Rowland, the young bank teller, is abducted for reasons she does not understand, she is clueless about this. It seemed to be natural and perfect for this to be a Joe Pike novel, where Joe is center stage. He's the main character. Now, I'll tell you the reason why. Because Joe Pike is that character you were just suggesting. You know, he's the ex-LAPD officer, one-time combat Marine, this very internalized, quiet character who spent many years as a private military contractor. You know, everything for him seems to be about action, about that proactive willingness to step forward. When everyone else is running away, Joe will run too. He seems to be hardwired to protect and to save the weak, the oppressed. It was natural for him to be the one who would take Isabel under his wing, who would try to save Isabel. You know why? Because it allowed me to explore Joe more deeply. Who this man is, why he does what he does, what drives him to be the guy that he is. And I love that about the book, because not only is it an exciting thriller as they try to find out why Isabel has been kidnapped and where she is and save her, it allows me and hopefully the readers to understand more about Joe Pike. And for me, that's why I write these books.
Well, you succeeded. As I said, I love Elvis for one reason. He has a yellow car, and I love yellow cars. That's one of my connections with Elvis. My favorite car was that I had was a yellow Hummer, and I love that car. But Joe, as you said, you feel protected with him, and I knew you would deliver. And I love Izzy. This character, I know sometimes you bring characters back, and I am really hoping that she will come back. I just found it. I loved her perspective. I loved the way you wrote her and her friend Carly, and I just really enjoyed them. But you also gave me a heck of a scare, because I thought you were going to do well. You bring back characters that have been in your other books, like John Chen, and you sort of. I was worried. I was worried there for a minute about John, but I was so happy that everything worked out. And this is what
I love John Chen. And I'll tell you something. It's funny for those of you listeners who don't know, John Chen is a criminalist for LAPD, and he is a funny character. Not funny as in tell jokes funny, but funny by his nature. I mean, John is a really bright, science-oriented nerd, and he is forever, how to say this properly, he is forever in search of a female companion, any female companion. He just wants a female companion, please. And he always falls short, and a poor guy, he has a self-esteem of a broken walnut. But I have to tell you, he's become one of my most popular characters.
Well, there's something endearing about him.
I've gotten thousands of emails from readers who are begging me to let John Chen get a girlfriend. I mean, they'll write to me and say, please, give this guy a break. Give him a girlfriend, please.
I know.
But that's part of the fun. That's part of what makes him so entertaining and endearing, that he's always striving and failing to get a girlfriend anyway.
Well, isn't it fun that you write characters that are so real? That
I love that.
And this is what happens.
Kathy, I love that readers get so involved with the characters. They write to me things like that. Listen, that's the greatest compliment in the world. The greatest review in the world. That people get involved with the characters, and the characters become real, or at least some measure of real, so much that people are invested in them and they care enough to write. It doesn't get any better than that for a
while. Well, you've done pretty well for a guy from a little town in Louisiana. Translated now, I think, into 65 languages. I didn't know there were 65 languages where they read these.
Yeah, last I heard, I think it was 62, maybe.
Oh, 62. Well,
but
whatever.
They're all over the planet, I don't know. I spread like a virus. So Elvis and Joe are everywhere, and it's yeah. I know, and no one's no one's more surprised than me.
Now, I was raised in a small town, and I remember distinctly the first library I ever saw. What about you? What was your first library visit?
My first library was the Baton Rouge Public Library, downtown Baton Rouge.
Was that exciting for you?
I was born in a small town called Independence, Louisiana, and I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. When I was a little boy, we only had one library. Later, a second library was open. And there was one newsstand, the City News, in downtown Baton Rouge. And my local drugstore was Tregg's Drugstore, and that's where I discovered comic books and learned how to read. And all of those places were to me the doors that led to today. Without them, I wouldn't have become a writer, and I wouldn't be talking to you now.
Well, Robert Crace, I don't have much time with you, but I will tell you looking forward to meeting you at BoucherCon. And the new book is called A Dangerous Man. And you are a fantastic man. That's we can write your autobiography. You can, a fantastic man. Yes.
Patsy, thank you so much. And listen, please introduce yourself at BoucherCon in Dallas. I'm really looking forward to meeting you.
Okay, well, I'm going to be one of. I lived in Texas for a long time, so I still have my cowboy hats. I'm going to be one of those glitzy people with cowboy hats because I love cowboy boots. The minute they are the best. There's nothing like a great cowboy pair of cowboy boots. So I will be there, and I will see you. And I just want to, again, thank you for being a guest on Joy on Paper. I know my listeners love you, and I know everyone, as I said, when we were here at the Vinoy Hotel in St. Petersburg for BoucherCon 2018, people were saying, where is he? Why isn't he here? So it's really going to be an exciting thing to meet you.
We'll have fun.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Wow, isn't he fantastic? He's a hoot. And so is CJ Box. I do hope you'll get these two books. I read so much. But these two books have been just, I don't know, they just came at the right time. There's something about them. They're fast reads, actually. They're fast simply because you can't put them down. And I have so many things to do all the time, but I just was so thrilled with it. And I wanted to thank very much Kim from L.A. She is a publicist. She's Robert's publicist, and she's sending me books. And right now, I've got I think in the past few days, she's a heck of a publicist because she is sending me everybody's book, and it's really fun. And as a matter of fact, I think I'm going to invite Kim to come on the program, and perhaps she can talk a little bit about publicity because she's obviously doing something right, especially for Robert Crace, because he's gotten a lot of great publicity, and of course, his books are bestsellers. I'm sure this new book, The Dangerous Man, will be a bestseller, as will this CJ Box. I'm holding it up again to the camera. It's a wonderful, wonderful story, and you will enjoy it. It's just, as I said, it's about this woman named Casey, and I just like the people around her. I like her son. I think as a mother, she's very endearing. She has a tough life, but she loves her son, and she's working really hard to take care of him and to take care of the family. And it's just a fun read. And the character of always sometimes the side characters just get you. And Isabel, her mother, who is a former hippie. Well, no, she's not a former hippie. She's still a hippie. Once a hippie, always a hippie. I don't know about that because, sometimes they change. But in this case, Isabel hasn't changed. And so she brings back the whole hippie vibe, which is lots of fun. And since there's not going to be a Woodstock, because I could tell everybody that a Woodstock with a bunch of people going around in with walkers would not be quite the same as the Woodstock back then, so 50 years ago. But Isabel is a sort of reflection on that, and I really enjoy this character, and CJ Box has done a terrific job. And as I mentioned, his wife and daughters are his first readers, and they have influenced him so that he has a really of you know, so many male authors are writing women characters because, of course, women characters sell. And some can do it better than others. And C.J. Box, I think, does it really the best. He really captures a wonderful, wonderful character here in Casey. And so do get these two books. And it's just been so much fun. It's so much fun for me to talk to these authors. And it's so much fun. I really do appreciate hearing from you about what books you like, what characters you like in a book, so that when I meet the author, when I interview the author, I can tell them, and they get a kick out of it. They like to know, for example, that you like this character, that you found this particular situation interesting. So do send me emails, especially over there in the Ukraine. I have to learn how to say something in Ukraine. I don't know what they speak Russian there, I guess. So I have to learn how to say thank you very much for sending me emails from the Ukraine. I think it's a hoot. Also Australia, g'day to you. So I want to thank you too also for sending me emails, and I appreciate it. It's really, really wonderful. I can't believe it sometimes that I have so many of you out there who are sending me these emails. It's really fun, and I do appreciate it. And I want to thank everybody again for just for supporting me, and especially Glenn Erickson. Thank you so much, Glenn. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to you coming back on the program to talk about your new book, and I think also you're revising a few of your other books. So make sure that you contact me and come in soon. And meanwhile, for everyone else, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. And that's what I hope will happen for Carol J. Perry and Rita Moreau, who is working on a new series. And again, thank you, Rita Moreau, known around here as Radio Rita, the one take, amazing, amazing radio star. And thank you so much, Rita, for everything that you do for me. I really appreciate it. And remember also today, say something nice to somebody. Say something that will make their day, and they'll go around with a smile, at least for 10 minutes or perhaps the entire day. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And he's saluting me. I love to be saluted. Oh, gosh, I have to join some kind of military reserve program or something just so I could get saluted all the time. I think it's a hoot. Anyway, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.